He loves to be generous with other people.
John 19. Verse 38. They've just crucified Christ. Verse 38. And after this, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews, besought Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him leave. Now there's a, what?
Okay.
Gave said okay. And Joseph of Arimathea was a member of the Sanhedrin. He was also more than likely, by the best evidence, the uncle of Jesus.
On Mary's side
or Joseph's? Huh? On Joseph's side. I mean, on Mary's, excuse me, Mary's side.
Christ was not a member of the Sanhedrin.
No. And there came also Nicodemus, who was also a member of the Sanhedrin, which at the first came to Jesus by night, and he brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes and about a hundred pound weight. Then they took the body of Jesus and wound it in linen clothes with the spices, as the manner of the Jews is to bury. Now in the place where he was crucified there was a garden, and in the garden a new sepulchre wherein was never a man yet laid. They laid Jesus therefore because of the Jews' preparation day, for the sepulchre was nigh at hand. And what all that means is, in order that all of the feasts would be fulfilled, Christ was crucified during the 14th. You know, the Passover meal was eaten on the 14th of Nisan in the evening after sunset. The day, the 14th, begins the day. And I mean, the evening begins the day. He was crucified that same day in the morning, about the third hour.
Was everybody fasting? I mean, was that...
No, it was previous to the fast of the firstborn was the previous to it, on the 13th of Nisan.
When did they eat the Passover meal?
The evening of the which was the beginning of the day, the evening of the 14th.
And he was crucified in the morning of the
15th of the 14th.
Okay.
Remember, the day goes from sunset.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but were they fasting from the eve of the... I was wondering why they were fasting that day.
We fasted Saturday during the day.
Uh-huh.
That day ended at sundown,
right.
Saturday. The next day started at sundown Saturday. Then we ate our Passover meal. Sunday at noon is the noon of the day that started Saturday night when he was crucified.
Okay. So it was like...
Anyway.
Yeah. Shut up, it's important to me. I wanted to bring that to
the feast of unleavened bread began on sundown of the day he was crucified. Okay? He had to have been, the law said that they couldn't have anything, he had to be off the cross and in the grave before sundown. You understand that? Now,
so that little bit of time before sundown was the first day in
the grave.
That counts as the first day in
the grave. Right, that's a whole other, you can go in detail if you want to, and I'll show you how it all happened. I don't feel like doing that now. All this was necessary in order that he be crucified on the first, that he be in the grave by the feast of unleavened bread, and so that he would be resurrected on the day of first fruits. Now, any of you that are interested in going over this in great detail, and the odds of this are about 60 billion to one that this would happen that way, because the feast, first of feast fruits was a movable feast, It always was kept on the morrow after the Sabbath during that Passover week. And in order for him to have risen from the dead on the Feast of First Fruits, which is what we're going to study tonight, he had to, I mean, the odds of it were happening in this way were more than you can want to count. So he was resurrected at night. The disciples didn't know it until in the morning. Now, he had to have been resurrected on the Feast of First Fruits in order that the scripture would be fulfilled, and all of the feasts would be fulfilled. The Feast of First Fruits came on the morrow after the Sabbath, in the middle of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The Feast of Unleavened Bread lasted 7 days. The bread which had originally been the bread of affliction, as we studied in Passover in Deuteronomy and Exodus, has now become the bread of the new state of existence. None of the leaven of Egypt could pervade it. They were to be a new lump as they were unleavened. And they were unleavened because of this, because of the resurrection. Now, there's some wild stuff that I want to go over with you. Some of you have heard this, some of you haven't. He abolished death by death. He led captivity captive, as we talked about the Cerebus and all that other stuff. The cross, which was death to the old man, has now become the tree of life to the new man. And the servitude that we experience as being servants is now our freedom. So everything about the new life is the opposite of the old life. You gain by being cast down. You win by losing. I mean, there's no thing that can be, there's no part of the old man that can be brought into this resurrection, into the Feast of First Fruits.
I mean, you see how there's nothing can be against you on the old terms. Everything's against you. On the new terms, nothing can be against you because it is that paradox.
Right. The bread of affliction has transformed into the bread of life. The Nag Hammadi Library, which they didn't find until just a few years ago, and it has a lot of these ancient gospels that people don't know whether or not. Anyway, this is the quote of Jesus after his resurrection, talking about his resurrection. Okay? I did not succumb to them as they had planned, and I did not die in reality but in appearance, lest I be put to shame by them. For my death, which they think happened to them in their error and blindness, since they nailed their man unto their death. It was another, their father, who drank the gall and the vinegar. It was another upon whom they placed the crown of thorns. And I laughed at their ignorance. Now, this is the source, this kind of statement is the source of all of the heresies, like the Passover plot and all that Jesus didn't really die. Because they don't understand the new man. And let me repeat that. I did not succumb to them as they had planned, and I did not die in reality, but only in appearance, lest I be put to shame by them. For my death, which they think happened to them in their error and blindness. Since they nailed their man unto their death, it was another, their father, who drank the gall and the vinegar. It was another upon whom they placed the crown of thorns, and I laughed at their ignorance. Now on the 15th then, this process started of the first fruits. The individuals brought many offerings, silver, gold, sacrifices of joyousness, Now everyone was at liberty to offer according to the blessing the Lord had given to each. Now you got to go back now to this site on Golgotha with the garden. This tomb was a cave. You understand that? At the same time that Christ was being taken off the cross, being carried to the garden tomb, another procession took place very near. And this was by the law. A noisy throng followed the delegates from the Sanhedrin outside the city and across the brook Kedron. They emerged in a field across the brook Kedron, which had been marked or set aside for this purpose. The law said, according to Leviticus 23:10 and 11, "You shall bring a sheaf, an omer, of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest. He shall wave the omer before Jehovah to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it." And there's a very specific instructions on how he was to wave this omer, or this sheaf of first fruits. And we'll go into it in a minute, of what it's made of. But it was a sheaf of first fruits, and he waved it, he held it in his hand thusly, and he waved it first side to side, and back, and up and down. And the high priest, or the priests, as he was offering to Jehovah before the altar, as Christ was being carried, well, as Christ was being resurrected, as we'll see, the priest was making the sign of the cross. The Passover sheaf, or the omer, was to be accompanied by a burnt offering of a he lamb without blemish of the first year, and a drink offering. Until this was done, no fresh grain might be used or sold in the land. Nothing could be used except from the previous year, the old year, until this wave offering was made. The omer was reaped in public the day before it was offered. The crowd gathered around the elders, who took care that it was done according to tradition. It had to have been planted in a specific place. It was guarded in the same way the matzah is and all that. The spot where the first sheaf was to be reaped was marked by the Sanhedrin on the 14th by tying together the bundles while still standing. Now, this is barley that they're doing this with, and that's very important, as we'll see in a minute. The barley had to be grown in an ordinary field in the land of Israel. It could not be in a garden or an orchard. The soil could not be watered artificially, nor could they have placed manure on it for any purposes. The field was to be plowed in the autumn for the planting, and sowed exactly 70 days before the Passover. Now it's this Christ, you got to visualize this. Christ is being, just by two or three people, Christ is being taken secretly, as it were, to this tomb. This noisy throng, this crowd of people, because they couldn't do anything. They couldn't sell their goods that they'd brought. They couldn't do anything until this wave offering had been done exactly. Just as the sun went down, three men, you know, there were three delegates of the high priest, and there was thousands of people around them, each with a sickle and a basket, set to work. Again, exactly, I mean, Christ has just been placed in the tomb. The stone is being rolled, and exactly as the stone was being rolled, the sun was setting, three stars were visible, two scenarios going on at the same time. The three men, the leader of those three men, asked the bystanders these questions. A, has the sun gone down? And they all looked around, and yeah, it's gone down, and they clapped and clapped. And then the three raised their sickle and said, "With this sickle," was exactly what they said in Hebrew, but by implication it was, "Shall we cut this omer with this sickle?" And everybody yelled and screamed, and yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, because this was great excitement, they couldn't do anything until this is done. into this basket on this day shall I reap. And then everybody, yeah, 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 do it. Yeah. Having all questions answered yes, they cut down the sanctified barley. The stalks were brought then into the temple itself, and then those stalks were thrashed with canes so as not to injure the grain. Then it was parched with a pan perforated with holes so that each grain was touched by the fire, and then it was exposed to the wind. Then this barley corn was ground, and then it was passed through 13 sieves, and each sieve was closer, was smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, 13 separate operations, until the flour was sufficiently fine so that when the gizbarim, or the treasurer, plunged his hand into the flour, nothing would stick to his hand. Nothing of that wave offering could stick to the flesh. Then the omer, which was 5.1 pints, was offered in the temple on the next day at sundown, just after sundown, in this, and it was mixed with frankincense and myrrh and the oil, just as Christ was buried with the frankincense and the oil and the perfumes, and then offered. And the remainder of it, it was more than 5.1 pints that was offered, but the remainder of it was used to feed the priests. It was mixed with a log of special oil and a handful of frankincense and then waved before the Lord. Now, that is the first fruit offering. It must conform. There's a whole tract of the Talmud on this. Every time you see the word first fruit in the scriptures, and you see it hundreds of times in this New Testament, that we are the first fruits, it's speaking specifically of this ceremony and this law. It's waved before Jehovah on the morrow after the Sabbath during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, just as Jesus broke the bands of death at that instant and was resurrected from the grave. As the priest was waving that in the sign of the cross, Jesus was coming up out of the grave. Now that's what you are. You are the first fruit by his activity. Ground and crushed through 13 sieves so that no flesh can adhere to it. Now, just as the Feast of Tabernacles has this mystery day that's called Azeret, or it's a Feast of Cessation, the eighth day feast, which is the wedding ceremony, so this is only a type. It's like the first of the first fruit. Now, 50 days later is the day of Azeret that's connected with Passover. Passover and Pentecost are really the same feast, tied together, are separated by 50 days. And by the act of him being presented as the first fruit by the resurrection, then on the Feast of Pentecost, we then are presented as another first fruit offering on that day. Go to Romans 16:5. Somebody else go to, Lee, go to Romans 16:5. Barb, go to 1 Corinthians 16:15. Matt, you have a Bible? Go to James 1:18. Matt, go to Romans 11:16. what's your name, go to Revelation 14:4.
He gets nervous.
Ed, go to Romans 8:23. Okay, read it.
Romans 16:5. Likewise, greet the church that is in their house. Salute my well-beloved Apenetus, is that his name?
It's close enough.
Who is the first fruits of Achaia unto Christ. Okay. Greet Mary.
The idea being, the idea of first fruit then, every Achaia is a region. And this individual was considered the first fruit. You understand? Just as, I mean.
1 Corinthians 16:15. I beseech you, brethren, ye know the house is to Tephanas, it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints.
Okay. Again, thereby he calls a whole group the first fruit of. Okay?
James 1:18
is the character of the first fruit.
Of his own will beget he us with the word of truth, that we should be kind of first fruits of his creatures. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God.
Okay. You understand? We're talking about the character now of the first fruit.
11:16. For if the first fruit be holy, the lump is also holy. And if the root be holy, so are the branches.
Okay. That defines your holiness. You are holy because of him.
He is the vine and you are the branch.
What you?
Yeah, and foundation.
Okay. Revelation. Go. Read 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Oh, okay. And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with them 144,000, having his father's name written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven as the voice of many waters and as a voice of great thunder. And I heard the voice of the harpers harping with their harps. And they sung, as it were, a new song before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders. And no man could learn that song but the 144,000, which were redeemed from the earth. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb.
The first fruits, again. Your virginity has nothing to do whether or not you've ever had sexual relationships. Your virginity is defined by the first fruit. The sexual activity is only the type or the anti-type. You understand?
23.
Yeah.
Not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body.
Mm-hmm. All right. You understand the significance. The cross had not. I mean, unless you understand the Feast of First Fruits, you will try to become that. You understand? We are it. You can't literalize the parable. Don't you? And the promise is, as we see that, we shall be like him. Not by running around being concerned with yourself or worried about whether you're doing something right, wrong, or indifferent. That's of the old thing. You're eating last year's bread or last epoch's bread. This is the new. We are not of the priesthood of Aaron. We are of the priesthood of Melchizedek, the old versus the new. We don't have anything to do with they who try to circumcise themselves, who put on their own bullshit and try to be right. We don't care what anybody says about us. We don't care. We will always be considered as deceivers, yet true. It doesn't matter. Because of the first fruit, and we are that first fruit. All right. The basis of this Passover then, which includes this, when we say Passover, it's this whole ceremony, it's to emerge from idolatry I trying to do it right and the right thing and getting it right and reasonableness and all the other stuff, to the mystery of faith, i.e. first fruit. Do you leave cause and effect totally? No, our life is grace. We leave reward and punishment totally. Now our life is mercy. We leave the defining of good and evil totally to total dependence. Now we come to this mystery of what's called the counting of the Omer. On the second evening of Passover, because, do you understand? We'll get into this more later, but everything from now until Pentecost is one feast. Everything from Passover until Pentecost is one feast. On the second evening of the Passover, there begins the counting of the Omer, that is, the counting of the 49 days after the sheaf of barley has been offered. The first counting began at a late hour, since the Omer was reaped and prepared only at night. Now, do you understand the counting of the Omer? The first fruit doesn't do you any good until you get waived as the first fruit offering.
It's out there somewhere.
Christ in Passover and this resurrection was the first fruit offering. Now, a new thing takes place. And we are waiting and waiting and waiting for this empowerment for the new thing. The only empowerment means as it crashes through your consciousness. That's what happens on the Feast of Pentecost, which is the Feast of Cessation for everything that has taken place in Passover. You understand? I'm going to teach more about...
This was cool, by the way.
I'm going to teach more about the counting of the Omer.
Yes. Can you talk about first fruit offering type stuff?
Well, we just did that.
Yeah, where were you? But it soon will be time for first fruit offerings.
Tithe. Is it a tithe or is it an offering?
Offering.
Okay. What is Pentecost?
Well, we're celebrating the 26th of May. Everybody look at your feast schedule, please. Okay.
Hi.
There's some heavy-duty stuff about the counting of the Omer that I've never taught him before. So.
Yay, me. Yay.
Take it, big guy.